Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to part two of our interview with John Kashuba about Haunted Ohio. Have you ever had a location in Ohio where they're willing to share the story, and some of the stories are rather scary, and then you also have a feeling of you know, dread, almost like you did, you said, when you had the Shadow Man experience where you had that for that short period of time. Has there been other locations like that where you just go, nice hotel, great stories, no way in hell I'm going to stay here?
Yeah, well, I think probably the closest feeling that I've had to sort of what I felt in Toledo would probably be at the Ohio State Reformatory. You know, we mentioned that in Mansfield.
Sure.
About that a little bit earlier. But, I mean, I was up on, you know, one of the cell blocks, and I was actually with one or two other people, and one of them was a medium, a pretty well-known person. And she was looking in, as we're walking down this cell block, you know, on a catwalk. I don't know how high we are because it's dark. You can't tell. But, you know, we're a couple stories up on one of these catwalks and walking past these cells. And as we're doing it, she's giving like a running inventory. She's saying, white guy, T-shirt, cigarette pack rolled up under his sleeve, anchor tattoo on his hand. Okay. And this guy, a black man, 6'2". She could talk about all these people and see all these people. Now, I don't have those abilities, so I didn't have that. But later on, I was walking around by myself, and I was in a different area of the cell block. And I'll tell you, I knew some of the history there. You know, Mansfield had a pretty rough history, to say the least. Not as bad as Moundsville in West Virginia, which is another penitentiary that is horrible.
Sure.
But I had that feeling. I mean, just walking through the cell block, and not only that, I had this feeling that I want to say being followed. That there was a presence around me somewhere. And as I said, I'm not a psychic, but I don't think you necessarily have to be, a confirmed psychic to be in tune with some of this stuff some of the time, if you let yourself, sort of be open to it. And so I had this feeling that there was like something there, and I had a recorder in my pocket. And it was just, it was on. I kept it on. And I just had this feeling. And so I started coming down the stairs, and I started coming down a little more rapidly because I just I felt a little creeped out,
Sure.
And at the bottom of the stairs was an iron door, iron mesh door. It's open. I pushed it open, and I closed it behind me, and it made a loud noise. And I left. When I got back, I had this recorder, and I started playing it back, and I didn't really think there was anything on it, but I heard myself coming down the stairs, and I can hear my feet, increasing in velocity because I'm coming down a little faster. Because I had this feeling that there was something there. It was just weird. And then I hear the door slam, the iron door bang, and then right after that, I hear this voice go, boom, just like that. It was like this whispered voice go, boom, as if somebody heard that and just said, yeah, boom, I said, oh, my God. So I don't know what that was about, but it may have been that I was being followed and the person just thought it was pretty funny that I slammed the door,
Do you ever have any desire to go back to places like that? Once you've had your experience, you've got your story, essentially.
Yeah.
Is there ever any curiosity for you to like, let's go back and see if it happens again?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's a lot of places that I feel that. I'd like to, now that that's happened, I'd like to know more about that and see if I can recreate it or see if I can get something else to occur,
Sure.
But like everything else, time gets in the way and you find yourself doing something new and you say, yeah, I got to get back there at some point, but, you don't. So
how about theaters in the state of Ohio? Obviously, theater is a place very rich, oftentimes if they're older, with a lot of history, a lot of energy there. And oftentimes it's hard to find one without a ghost. What sort of theater ghost stories have you come across in Ohio?
Well, it's interesting that the old tradition of theaters having what they call a ghost light on the stage. And you probably know that.
Sure.
But you know, this goes way back to Shakespeare's time when they used to keep a torch. And the idea was to keep spirits away from the stage. I mean, that was the whole intention. And so they still have these, you know, the stage will have a little light bulb somewhere above, you know.
Yeah.
I think one of the strangest ones was the Majestic Theater in Chillicothe, which had a fire a few years back, and I'm not even sure right now the condition of it, whether it was, I hope it wasn't burnt to the ground. I hope it was able to be restored or not, but I know there was a fire. But what happened at this place that really makes it kind of a creepy place was during the early 1900s, when the Spanish influenza hit America, you know, it began actually among army troops in America. It began, we think, in a base maybe in Kansas, but it spread rapidly through troops. And, of course, to the general population as well. I mean, you know, thousands, actually probably millions of people worldwide actually died from the Spanish flu. But in Chillicothe, there was an army base not so much out of town where they were training troops to be sent overseas for World War I to fight. So it would have been like 1917, 1918, I guess, because we didn't get in until toward the end of the war. But anyway, so there were these troops that were being trained at this base. And the flu hit. And hundreds of the guys died, and they had no place to put the bodies. They were rapidly, you know, piling up. So they actually pressed the Majestic Theater into use as a morgue. And they brought these bodies, and you know, here's these, you know, young strapping guys, right, army guys, and the flu kills them. And they're laid out there. And there was one newspaper account at the time that said there were so many, they said they were stacked like cordwood. You know, so it gives you an idea of what it was. And so that is supposedly is part of the reason why this place is haunted. But surprisingly enough, the ghosts that I've heard from there had not been like soldiers. Like you would expect, well, if there were hundreds of poor, you know, soldiers killed and stacked up there until their bodies could be shipped back home or whatever, well, shouldn't we see a bunch of soldiers there? And it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems more that there's a spirit of a guy who they think was, what would I say, not like a stagehand, maybe like a theater manager or maybe a stagehand, who apparently had an accident and died in that place, and he's been seen there. And also a little girl who they don't know who she would be or what her connection would be, but she's been seen supposedly in the aisles and things too. So, but theaters are interesting because there's so much going on in the theater itself in terms of acting, right? I mean, and people say that somehow that's like a magnet, you know, for paranormal activity. I don't know why that would be, but again, if you go back to the idea of a ghost light being centuries old, maybe there is something to that. Maybe our predecessors knew something more about about ghosts relative to acting than we did, you know. But that's one of my favorite places. As I say, I don't know what the situation is right now. I don't know if it's if it's still around or not. I hadn't been out of Chillicothe in years, but I hope it is.
Yeah, theaters have always been an intriguing place for me. I mean, just I think I had not heard what you had said earlier about the acting being a magnet. I always thought of maybe just the acting itself and the emotion being expelled.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself maybe being you know, a magnet itself, in the same way that people going to a funeral could be just almost like a battery type for a haunting, where a lot of people don't die in the funeral home, but we hear a lot of funeral home stories, and just because of all the emotion and energy being expelled at a funeral home or a theater, which another place where it gets expelled when people are feeling emotions, increasing the likelihood of stuff going on within them.
Sure. Well, when there are people, you probably know, you know, who consider themselves, they call themselves psychic vampires. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they basically feed, if you will, on the emotional energy, you know, the emotions of other people. Mm-hmm. And they don't do it in a negative way. I mean, I actually know one, and she says that, no, you know, I mean, people know that, and I'm not out to kill anybody. It's just what I need for my own, you know, well-being.
Sure.
But if that's the case, then it would make sense that there is some, let's say, energy transfer or something. And so if spirits rely on energy. We don't know if they do, but that's what people seem to think. Well, then maybe it's the same thing. Maybe they do work in areas where there's a high emotional content. I mean, think of the spiritualist church. If you go to a spiritualist service, there's a lot of singing. There's a lot of energy. And at the end of the service, when the medium takes the stage and starts, you know, channeling spirits, they do it in a very energetic way. Their voice is raised, their arms are going, and they get the crowd all worked up. So they're creating more energy. They're creating more emotion, which they think helps connect to spirit. So I think you're right. I think there's something there in terms of, I think we can call emotion and all that. I think we can call that energy as well.
Sure. We were talking about some of the troops being stacked up in that theater. And of course that leads us to battlefields in Ohio. And I think sometimes people that are not well-versed in their history may not exactly think of Ohio as being a place with a ton of battlefields. But there certainly has its fair share and its stories on those.
Yeah, definitely. One I write about in, I'm not even sure which Ohio book, I think it might be the first one, is sort of going back up to the Toledo area, Fort Meigs, which is in Perrysville, which is just, you know, right up there. I'm sorry, Perrysburg. Anyway, you know, Fort Meigs was built for the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. And I think twice, if not maybe three times, it came under attack by British troops, and the British had Indian allies. You know, Tecumseh and some of the other Shawnee and other tribes were allied with the British against the Americans. And so they had these mixed forces that attacked the force at, you know, the fort, I said, at least twice. And this fort, you can go up there today, it's reconstructed, you know, and you can see it. And basically, it's just a perimeter fort. You know, it's a wooden palisade fort with a couple of blockhouses and an open center. And so when this fort came under attack, I mean, you can imagine you had the British surrounding the fort, raining in all kinds of artillery, mortar, rocket fire, bombs, all the kind of 18th century artillery they had. And the poor guys in the fort really had very little place to go. They threw up big earthworks and basically just, you know, plowed their body into that and hoped like hell that nothing would land on them, you know. But this, so the fort came under attack, like I say, twice, maybe three times. I had to go check it. But any time, each time, it survived. It held out, but with a great loss of life. And today there's a cemetery right outside the gates where some of the soldiers from both sides, American militia as well as some of the British troops and things, are buried. But we also know that there's scores that are probably unaccounted for and are probably still on the grounds someplace or outside the fort. And the fort... The fort right now is surrounded by suburbia. I mean, people's backyards come like right up to the palisades almost. So it's funny because neighbors who live around there have said that they've heard like gunfire and cannon fire at night, and that they've heard horses. I mean, they say they've heard the sounds of battle. But they have the people that work there, the docents, every October do a garrison ghost walk. And they will take you around the fort, and they'll tell you the stories, the ghost stories that have happened there. And what happens is the docents are always in uniform. So the guys are dressed like soldiers from 1812, and the women are wearing like these long sort of, you know, gingham gowns and that kind of stuff. So they have talked about seeing soldiers there. I talked to one of the docents who said that she was walking out to her car in a parking lot, and it was at night, you know, and she was walking out, and her shift was over, and she was by herself. And as she's walking out, she heard sort of the gravel crunching beside her, heavier step than her. And she heard what she said, like clanking, like metallic clanking sounds. And she said that, you know, she'd been around long enough to hear the guys dressed as soldiers, to hear them go by with all their gear and, you know, canteens rattling and stuff like that. And she said, that's exactly what I heard, is I heard the sounds of a guy in military gear walking beside me. And she said, well, I didn't see anybody. And she said, then I looked and I just saw a glimpse of something, kind of a shadowy thing, and it was gone. But she said that, you know, he escorted me to my car. So I mean, she basically, you know, she had it surprised her, obviously, but yeah. She felt okay about it. this guy is protecting me. And again, she was wearing 18th century clothing, you know, so, I mean, there could be some connection where, you know, these spirits don't even know where they are anymore, and they're lost, and this guy really thinks he's, you know, actually escorting a woman from that time out somewhere, you know, so, but, yeah, that's an interesting place, and as they say, they have, there's a lot of stories that come from there, because, you know, a lot of guys died there over the time of the battle.
That's an interesting concept of what you just talked about with the woman in the period clothing. And this is just an opinion mm-hmm. question, but do you think that individuals who dress in period attire, whether it be war reenactors or what have you, docents, or someone giving a tour at a museum, sometimes they dress in period clothing for whatever they're right. representing. Do you think that that increases the odds or somehow draws out spirits of the respective generation, its respective time period, to make themselves known because of possibly confusion?
Yeah, I think so. I have a book called Ghost Hunters, which is national in scope. It's not related to any specific state. But I have a chapter in there called Ghosts of the Battlefield. And that's exactly what it is. And I interviewed people all across the country. I interviewed primarily reenactors. So these were Civil War guys, they're revolution, they were whatever. But these were guys and women who would wear period clothing to go out in the field and, you know, camp like they were there and do military maneuvers or whatever. And I would get a lot of stories from these people. And they would say that they would always, that they would see, you know, like, let's say Gettysburg, you know, a guy might be camping out there and he'd see a Confederate soldier who would come walking over to him thinking that he's, you know, joining his comrades and then disappear. So there might be something to that. If there's any validity to the idea of ghosts being, say, sometimes trapped, you know, in a time that was their own, then they might react to something like that, thinking that that's still them, that's part of them, that's their world. So I think there's something to it. You certainly hear enough stories like that about sure. people in costume that are approached by or see spirits or have some event like that.
I know there's the Camp Chase Confederate Cemetery in Columbus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that a location with a lot of activity?
You know, there was a lot of activity for a while, way back. It seems like when it was first started as a Confederate cemetery. I mean, Camp Chase was a prisoner of war. Well, it was a big camp. It was a camp that trained federal troops and also brought in supplies and provisions, but it also had a POW camp for Confederate prisoners that were brought up, and the ones that died were buried right there on the grounds during the war anyway, and it seemed like afterwards, fairly soon after the war, there was activity there. And one great story is called Woman in Gray, Lady in Gray, who apparently would visit this one gravesite for years of a particular soldier from South Carolina, I think he was. And even long after she shouldn't even be around anymore, people would say you still see the Lady in Gray. But most of the Confederate soldiers that were buried there have since been returned back to, you know, wherever state they came from, to their families and everything. So actually a lot of those graves now at Camp Chase are actually empty. I mean, the stones are there and they're still marked, but the majority of them probably don't even have bodies anymore. So there hasn't been activity there in quite some time. The Lady in Gray has not been seen in a while, and so I'm just thinking that perhaps because of the fact that so many of the remains have been removed, including, I think, the one that she went to, Benjamin Allen. That was the name of the soldier's grave that she would visit, Benjamin Allen. I don't think he's there anymore either. I think he has since been removed a while back. So the short answer is I don't think there's much activity there anymore, if anything, and it's a very small cemetery now, too. There's not much of it left.
Cemeteries in general in the state of Ohio, how are those active locations, in your opinion?
You know, to be honest, almost any place that I've studied, I've done some cemetery work, you know, in Illinois and Ohio and other places, but I don't really think that cemeteries are the best places to find ghosts. I mean, you look at it this way. When are you in a cemetery? You're in a cemetery after you're dead, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't usually spend your life in a cemetery. You know, when you die, you are in a cemetery sometimes. But then if you somehow return as a ghost or you're in another world or whatever, why would you hang around in a cemetery? There's nothing to hold you there. Wouldn't you rather, if you have the ability to move yourself to different locations, wouldn't you rather go back to your home where you lived, or a place, maybe your job where you loved your job, the place where you worked all the time or something? Why would you want to hang around in the cemetery when you were only there when you were dead and it has no meaning to you at all? Which is not to say that cemeteries aren't haunted, but I think for the most part I find far more activity in places other than cemeteries than I do in cemeteries. I love being in cemeteries.
Sure. No, I feel the same way. It's interesting because sometimes you do have stories that come out of them. And my sure. thought about haunted cemeteries does, I think, come more so from the living than the dead in terms of where the energy is coming from. It's not the people who are buried there. It's more so this is kind of the condensed energy that comes from time to time when you have a burial and you have a group yeah. of people standing there. I think that might be one of the more likely moments where something may try and feed off of that to make itself known or to become present in some right. way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's what I think, too. It doesn't seem logical. Well, of course, there's not a whole lot of logic about ghosts, I guess. But
yeah, nothing that that we can really pinpoint, anyway. One more area I want to talk about, and I'll let you pick which one you want to touch on. Hotels. Obviously, there's hotels, there's bed and breakfast, all that, whatever you would categorize. In Ohio, as if someone said, what is the most active or the most intriguing haunted hotel in the state? What would you say it is?
Well, okay, so there's a couple that I've been to. I think probably the one that appeals to me most is probably the Lafayette Hotel in Marietta. This is an old hotel. It's been around. Well, I mean, it's still serviceable as a hotel, but it's been around probably over 100 years, and they've had a lot of different things happen. I talked to two, I guess you don't call them chambermaids anymore. What do they call them? Housekeepers. Chambermaid sounds like I'm something from Charles Dickens here. But yeah. So housekeepers. One of them was there were two women that were working on a floor. And they split up. One started at one end of the room, and the other one started at the other end of the room, at the other end of the hall, rather. And one of them was fairly young, like in her 20s, and the other one was an elderly, older woman, and she had had some heart conditions. She was, not in the best of shape. So the older woman is at one end of the hall. The other woman is way at the other end, and all of a sudden, as she's, making the sheets and stuff and making the bed or whatever, she hears the other woman scream and yell. So she drops everything and she runs to, she runs to find her because she's thinking, oh my God, this, this poor woman, she's in her 50s or 60s or whatever. I know she's not doing, she must have a heart attack, She goes in there and the woman is like calmly folding sheets or something, and the girl's out of breath. He goes, what's going on? What's going on? She says, well, what are you talking about? Well, I heard you scream. Are you okay? He said, I didn't say anything, And this happened twice. Woman went back and she heard it again. She heard some woman screaming something. She said, oh, come on. Now she thinks this woman's just, pulling her leg. But she said, no, I I don't know what you're talking about. I've been just minding my own business, making this bed. So they don't know what that's about. There's a ghost there of everybody recognizes him because he was a longtime manager at the place. I've got his name in the book, and again, for the life of me, I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember what it was. But this guy, everybody loved him. He was a a kindly old guy, and they liked him. And they say that they'll go into there's a restaurant in the hotel. And there's one little corner where he used to always run the books at the end of the night. He'd sit there with his ledger and he'd go over everything, the receipts, and he'd have a cup of coffee or something and do that. And they say that, people will still see him sitting there, sometimes at night. And of course, he's long gone. But the story that gets me the most is one of the servers in the restaurant went downstairs. There's a locker room downstairs for the wait staff and everything else to get changed, And one of the servers told me that he went down there to start his shift. When he went into the locker room, there was a young guy, maybe 18 or something that was sitting in there. And the server didn't recognize him or anything, but thought, well, it's just a new hire. You know, I don't know who the kid is. He just kind of nodded and said hello or something. He said, but the young guy never said anything to him, never even acknowledged him, just kind of sat there. So the server thinks, well, that's a little weird, you know. But so the guy, the young guy gets up, and he starts to walk out the door. And the server's thinking, this is kind of odd. He was just sitting there. He didn't say anything to me. He didn't acknowledge me anyway. Now he's just getting up and he's walking out. And there was something about the way he was dressed. The server said he didn't seem to be, he was dressed oddly. It didn't seem current. It seemed sort of old fashioned in a way, you know. So he walks out the door. And so the server goes through the door and he watches this guy. The guy goes down the hall. And then he takes a left and he makes a turn. There's no place to make a turn. He basically makes a left into the wall and disappears. So that obviously freaked the server out a lot. But, you know.
Sure.
So and there's more to this story. The Lafayette has some very large big photo enlargements of Marietta from like the mid-19th century. And there's one picture of a big horse-drawn sleigh, and it's stacked up with all kinds of like barrels and stuff. It's like some kind of delivery sleigh, and there's some guys standing around. It's in the winter, and they're all wearing these heavy coats and everything. But the sleigh is actually on the ice of the Ohio River. It actually is frozen over solid at that point, and I guess it was they were going across or whatever. But the server on a different day had never really paid attention to that picture so much. But one day he looked at it, and he noticed that on the wagon were two younger guys that were sitting there. And he swears that one of the guys was sitting on the wagon was the guy that he saw down in the locker room.
Wow.
So I love that story. So, yeah, so that's a cool place. And you can stay there, and people will tell you that, you know, the water goes off and on, the showers turn off and on, the lights turn off and on, you know, all that kind of stuff in some of the various rooms, too. So there seems to be a lot of activity there.
That wraps up part two of our interview with John Kashuba about Haunted Ohio. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.